first by Paddy, who told the sitters what was intended, and who was seconded by Black Cloud, who foretold what would be on the photographic plate before it was developed. Here is signal evidence of extraneous intelligences operating laws unknown to human beings. The brass ornament is 3¾ inches high and weighs 2 ounces. This object was definitely passed through the wall and/or door of one room into another. To achieve this, the ornament must have been rendered into a dematerialized condition of a vibration so high that it would pass through solid obstacles as sound passes through a brick wall. In this condition, it passed through the medium's body and rematerialized on emerging. The ectoplasmic state at the emerging doubtless is an essential factor for the rematerialization, as is necessary for all forms of materializations. This process, demonstrating that apported objects have to come via the medium's body, is consistent with the usual procedure of apport mediums, who are able to produce apports, using a trumpet for their delivery. 1. The trumpet is connected to the medium by an ectoplasmic arm as in plate number 12. The apport in its dematerialized condition travels via the medium's body along the ectoplasmic arm into the mouth of the trumpet, where it is materialized, the trumpet acting as a conserver or retainer for the ectoplasmic force and the act of materialization. On a later occasion, the apporting of two objects was witnessed in red light. For some hours before a seance, when apports may occur, Mr. Weber feels a tightness of the abdomen and is therefore able, at times, to know what is intended. On the occasion referred to, he had these symptoms, and therefore he invited a search to be made of his person, which was carried out by a member of the circle, Mr. S. Croft, a member of the Metropolitan Police Force. In the seance room before all the 1. The method of apporting objects viaduct the medium's body is not applicable to all apport mediums. The author was present in April, 1940, at a sitting with another medium, where apports were received by a different process. On this occasion, the trumpet, previously shown to be empty, was taken to the ceiling, to receive the apport, in this case a glass vase. The explanation from the guide is that the object is transformed into a vibratory state, and contained in an etheric envelope. The object is then rematerialized within the trumpet. Another apport produced on this occasion was a finely engraved seal, which rematerialized while the trumpet was describing circular movements of amazing speed. At first, faint tappings could be heard in the rapidly moving trumpet, gradually becoming stronger as the materializing process was completed. Sitters, just previous to his sitting down for roping. He did not leave the presence of the sitters, but immediately sat down for roping. The red light was on, sufficiently bright for all to see the medium with his arms bound to the chair. Trumpets were in levitation, also clearly discernible in the red light. One of these turned round, presenting its large opening to the solar plexus region, and an object was heard to fall into it. It then came to the author, who was asked to take out of the trumpet the article within an Egyptian ornament. See plate number 36. After a minute or two, the trumpet again traveled to the solar plexus and another object was heard to fall into it. This, too, was taken out of the trumpet by the sitter to whom it was presented, Mr. S. Croft. See plate number 36. In this case, a stone budder. It will be seen from the photographs that the size of the objects could not have been hidden from an experienced searcher. Furthermore, all the 11 persons present saw the medium tied to the chair and the trumpet, which had a second before been in very violent levitation, move to the medium's body, when the article was heard to fall into the trumpet. Ectoplasm was not seen at the time of emergence of these two objects. This is easily understood, since the process was being executed in red light and ectoplasm is in its strongest form or highest vibration when invisible. Plate number 36 also shows an apport produced the week previous to the above incident, but this was produced in darkness, and pinned directly on the lady's dress, to whom it was given, Mrs. G. Layton. At seances elsewhere, apports are occasionally produced. On one occasion, a coin commemorating the year 1915 in an American state. The recipient, Mr. Gordon Graham, said he had been in that state in that particular year. At the same seance, a lady received a crucifix that she had been informed, by another medium, would be given to her. 64. It is a pertinent fact that Mr. Weber gave this sitting at a few hours' notice. He and the author were invited to attend a sitting with another medium at Luton when this medium wired that he could not be present owing to illness. The organizer, Mr. Gordon Graham, telephoned Mr. Weber to ask if he would sit, so that on this occasion there could not have been any preconceived action on Mr. Weber's part, and the lady who received the crucifix came from Bedford, a complete stranger both to Mr. Graham and to Mr. Weber. Chapter 10. The Astral Head. This photograph is one of the most remarkable yet secured, for here has been photographed for the first time, and physically, an astral or spirit head. The photographer, Mr. W. J. Clayton, was not a spiritualist, and the only reason he was present at the séance was that he possessed a camera. This camera was of the box type and fixed to an ordinary though somewhat rickety tripod. This photograph is so important that consideration is given to the possibility of error on the part of the photographer or complicity on the part of the medium. The question of a double exposure is ruled out by the precision of the sitters as well as the body of the medium. It should be borne in mind that a period of several minutes, with the white light on, occurred between each exposure. The flash bulb had to be changed and plates withdrawn and new plates inserted. The rickety state of the photographer's stand was also an item that would have prevented such precision if it had been a double photograph. It is not credible that a sitter could so precisely retain or resume a posture so photographically exact. The photograph was taken at an exposure speed of 1/50th of a second, by Sasha Light Flash. Knowledge of the number of exposures made and the recording on the other plates in the camera, prevents the theory of double exposure remaining tenable. If it were possible for the medium to register these two distinct impressions, he would have to have done so within a fraction of the 50th of a second exposure without movement, leaving each image to register precisely on the plate. Also, he would have had to have judged the changing of his expression to coincide with the precise 50th part of a second during which the flash occurred, an obviously impossible feat. Thus, there can be no other conclusion than that the two faces were in physical being simultaneously during the exposure. The guide has said that the outer face is the spirit face. It is impossible to suggest any other reasoned statement as to what the outer face can be, and it therefore remains that this must be the astral or spirit counterpart of the medium. Further examination of the photograph supports this view. The inner face is not Mr. Weber's normal face but shows a transfiguration by the guide, a tenable thesis when the astral body is outside the physical body and the guide is in control. The outer face is a perfect face, devoid of expression. It should be noted how the chin of the astral face stops short where it meets the lapel of the coat, showing the harmony of density between the dematerialized coat and the astral face. The alignment of the two faces is precise. But whilst it can be seen that the eyes and mouth are in line, the ears are not, which indicates that a rotary motion is necessary for one head to join the other. This rotary movement provides evidence that the two heads are three-dimensional, that is, it is not one face superimposed over the other, and is further evidence that the picture is not the result of a double exposure. There is not a physical head in existence. The rear part of the inner head is in a state of partial dematerialization, as is seen by its transparency. The darker part within the two heads is where the two heads merge, bringing the total density of the two heads to normality. The astral head possesses breadth, as evidenced where the strand of hair on the astral head is shown over the hair of the inner head. This may be more readily understood if the rotary motion of the merging of one head over the other is taken into account. This photograph was obtained primarily in order to illustrate the dematerialized condition of the coat when being removed or restored to the medium's body. See Chapter 8, The Removal and Replacing of the Coat. It provides proof of the thesis held by spiritualists that each person possesses, while in the physical condition, an astral body, which leaves the flesh at the time of the physical death, to continue in a spirit sphere of activity. Since this photograph was taken, there have been further incidents in Mr. Weber's developing circle that bear out the ability of the guides to dematerialize the physical body. The first incident occurred in a good red light, when the medium's head, hands, and arms were seen to have vanished. The sitters nearby were able to look down into the cavity formed by the neck part of the clothing, and only a black void was to be observed. Mrs. Weber, who sat near to the medium on this occasion, was rather alarmed at the condition of the medium. On a subsequent evening, in a duller red light, one not sufficient to see the medium as clearly as on the above occasion, the Reverend Morris Elliott and Mr. Biley of the Link, who were present, were invited by the guide to feel the space where the medium's hands and arms should be roped to the chair. They were not there, and the Reverend Morris Elliott slid his hand up inside one of the medium's coat sleeves, but could feel no arm there. Then the medium's hands and arms returned almost instantaneously. This chapter is a recital of facts without elaboration. Much could be written upon the implications of this photograph, and the importance of being able to provide a physical photograph of the spirit body. Chapter 11, Levitation of the Medium. Part of the demonstration of psychic power given at seances is the levitation of the medium, who is throughout bound to his chair from the place where he is sitting to another part of the room or hall. Several attempts have been made to photograph this phenomenon, but without evidential success. The process involves the lifting up of the medium with his chair into the air, where he often stays for a number of minutes, and then depositing him in a place as far from his original position as the room or hall allows. At times during such levitation, the medium's feet are felt traveling round on the heads of the sitters. When there has been some light present, such as a luminous spot on the wall, or perhaps where there has been a dull emergence of light through a curtain, the body in the chair has been seen in suspension. On occasions in halls where the roof is high, not only is it clear from the sound of the voice that the medium is high up, but evidence is provided of the levitation by the movement of light fittings that could only be reached with a ladder. Further, when the table has been previously levitated out into the room, the medium is deposited with only the smallest margin of room between the table and the sitters to space. This phenomenon usually takes place at the end of the seance, when the floor space before the medium is occupied with luminous trumpets and other objects, these precluding any possibility of the medium attempting to wriggle the chair and himself from one position to another. The following is an extract from a letter dealing with the levitation of the medium, published in the Two Worlds, February 24, 1939, by Mr. J. W. Biley, chairman of the Link. 24 sitters were around the walls, white light on, Weber securely bound in his chair, 3-foot-6-inch table obliquely across center of circle, leaving only a narrow gangway between sitters, luminous trumpet on floor at sitters' feet, half right inclined to me. Lights put out my eyes were on trumpet. If the medium passed between my eye level and the floor, it would blot out the trumpet. He did not pass. No sound of medium moving. I was sitting next but one. Control's voice heard from ceiling, well to my left, a gentle bump on the floor. Light put on medium still tightly roped. Admittedly, it is possible for the medium to wriggle across the circle whilst bound in his chair, but to do this under the prevailing conditions, he would have to come forward 2 feet, turn to the right 3 or 4 feet, and then pass between the table and the sitters, which could not be done without bumping the table or sitters, and there was no sound of a moving chair. The total distance he would have to cover would be 15 feet, an absolute impossibility in a few seconds without noise. Quite often marks from the medium's hair, from the hair preparation he uses, are seen upon the ceiling. Plate number 25 illustrates an unusual happening. An attempt had been made to photograph the levitation, when by some means the power necessary to lift the medium was reversed. The sound of the chair coming down was heard, and then a continued grinding and cracking of considerable volume. When the light was 70 put on, the medium was found tied to the wreckage of the chair. The Windsor chair that he occupied was very strongly constructed. The seat was 1¼ inches thick, and this was broken right across in 2 places, while the chair legs were forced out, as were the stays, and the armrest was broken away from the back. The photograph taken at the moment of breaking up clearly shows what is occurring. Please note the entire absence of strain or tension in the medium's body. It is worthwhile to consider the amount of force necessary to break up a chair so completely. It is doubtful whether a very strong man could, by lifting and then smashing the chair down. Break it as described. Remember, the medium, as photographed at the moment of the smashing up of the chair, is in a roped condition, precluding, of course, any such collusion. This photograph is indicative of the tremendous forces brought into being by the spirit operators. Addendum March 1940. On February 26, at a séance given at the International Institute for Psychic Investigation, levitation took place. In descending, one of the rear legs of the armchair into which the medium was bound, was placed through a cross stay of the table, which had previously been levitated to the far side of the circle. Another impossible human feat, in total darkness, without noise, and definitely proving that the medium in his chair had been suspended in the air. 71, Chapter 12, Table Levitation. These photographs show tables in levitation. In each case, the tables are well in front of the medium, though owing to the head-on focus they appear to be nearer to the medium than they actually are. The table in plate number 23 weighs over 45 pounds, and was very highly polished. Cassandra refers to this incident in his description of the séance as requiring a husky man to lift it. If this table was resting on the cushion, it would show indentation marks. Comparison of the cushion on which the medium is seated, with that in plate number 21, shows that the cushion is depressed. This record testifies to the theory of Professor Crawford that the weight levitated is returned through the medium. Plate number 24 shows the table in levitation in front of Mr. Bernard Gray of the Sunday Pictorial. The reason why Mr. Gray is seen crouching is that the table a moment before had been dancing on his head and shoulders. On other occasions, while the table is levitated high in the air, a trumpet also rises and hits the table all round, to demonstrate that the table is indeed floating in the air. Addendum March 1940. On February 19, 1940, at the International Institute for Psychic Investigation, the table was levitated, circled round, and touched the heads of sitters, and finally descended with such force as to break the leg of the table completely off. 72, Chapter 13, Trumpet Phenomena. Mr. Colin Evans describes in his report, with some detail, trumpet movements. The guides have now brought their technique between trumpet movements and light to a perfect state. If the one who operates the white light responds immediately the call for light comes, the trumpets are seen in movement as the light goes on, these being well away from the medium helplessly bound in his chair. As the light is put out, the trumpets ascend at once. They're often lying on the floor, yet this makes no difference, since they rise with force as soon as the room is darkened. Four trumpets have been seen in simultaneous levitation. The best trumpet movement is with two trumpets. One may be at one end of the room and the other at the further end. One trumpet may be in the air knocking on the ceiling, while the other sweeps the floor. Tall people are unable either to hold up a trumpet so high as is accomplished in the séance, or with both arms extended span the distance between the trumpets. May it again be stressed that, for such a movement to take place within a split second of light being put on, with the medium still entranced, bound in sealed ropes, with knots, fastened with gummed tape or wax, provides incontrovertible evidence of spirit power. In the red light, these movements are still more interesting, for the trumpets are then clearly seen to be floating about the room without visible means of control. 73. Trumpets in levitation will move as requested by the sitters, turning completely round as if on an axis, first with the narrow end towards the medium, then with the broad end, and so on. The trumpet will weave its way round the heads of the sitters, going past one side of the head with the broad end outwards, turning round the back of the head and coming back with a small end foremost, going to the next sitter in similar manner, and so on round the circle. The speed at which the trumpets travel is phenomenal, so rapid that the luminous bases appear as a continuous band of light. At times they travel so fast that the eye cannot follow the movement even in the restricted area of room. To see two trumpets, moving at such a speed, weaving intricate patterns one with the other without ever hitting each other, provides an amazing spectacle. It is often the case that there is an electric light pendant or a length of flex hanging from the ceiling in the center of this trumpet activity. Only once has the electric fitting been smashed or the flex pulled down, though the trumpets in fast movement will suddenly slow up and gently touch the pendant. Again, the rapid movement may bring the trumpet to within a fraction of an inch of a sitter's nose, so that the wind caused by the movement is heard and felt. Repeatedly, the trumpet will do this in front of a sitter, then flash away to caress gently the face of another sitter on the opposite side of the room. The control of the trumpet is perfect. For any person normally to execute such movements in total darkness without hitting a sitter or a hanging object would be an obvious impossibility. To exhibit such controlled movement, considerable energy must be present. This is evidenced by the marks that are made on the floor or linoleum when the trumpet sweeps the floor in large arcs. 74, plate number 22. The trumpet has been outlined, shows the trumpet in movement close to a sitter. So rapid was the movement that the flash of the bulb was not fast enough to enable a precise trumpet to be photographed. On this occasion, the press switch to flash the exposure was tied to the arm of the medium's chair, and the guide, through the medium, is pressing the switch with a finger, thus taking the photograph. One phase of this phenomena that often causes apprehension on the part of a sitter is that the trumpet returns with great force, hitting the medium on his head. The guide explains this as the return of a psychic rod, carrying the trumpet back with it to the medium. On other occasions, for reasons not yet known, the medium has been unmercilessly beaten on the head with the trumpet continuously for some moments, the trumpet swinging with tremendous force and crashing down on the head. At one time, a long heavy trumpet made of stout tin was in use, and this would beat the medium's head. If a person were normal, surely he would soon be beaten into unconsciousness. So terribly severe have been these beatings that the author could not believe, in the beginning, that the trumpets could have hit the head so hard. He believed they must have been hitting the wall. After the sitting, the wall was examined and there was not even the smallest indentation of the wallpaper. At the next sitting, the author was invited to place his hand sideways on the medium's head, while the trumpet crashed down upon it, to demonstrate that the trumpet did come in contact with the head. After such events, it is particularly noteworthy that there is neither bruise nor bump on the medium's head, nor even the slightest tread mark. The condition of his body in trance must not only be impervious to physical blows, etc., but the tissues must be conditioned not to react to blows, etc. A dead body will bruise. And it is still another mystery of the spirit people, how they are able so to protect a body from ill. 75. In this connection, it is interesting to note that medical men who have been invited to take the medium's pulse while in trance, have declared it to be between 90 and 100 an appreciable acceleration. One doctor gave the opinion that it would be likely to prove fatal for such a pulse rate to be maintained for 2 hours, which is the usual duration of a seance. The respirations have also been taken, and found to be nearly double the normal rate. When a two-piece trumpet has been used, it has sometimes become separated, the two ends being widely apart. At one time, one end was outside the circle behind the sitters. This end was brought up behind the sitter, passed over the head and reunited with the other end. This separation and joining together has been observed on a number of occasions. 76. Chapter 14. Ectoplasmic structures. The photographs referred to in this chapter are ectoplasmic structures physically constructed for various purposes. The following chapter dealing with voice boxes is closely connected with these structures, and both chapters should be considered together. It is desirable that definitions should be clearly understood. The term psychic rod has been generally applied to all such forms of ectoplasmic emanations. The photographs obtained, and very close observance of the various forms of phenomena in which a force external from the medium is employed, now definitely permit of two main classifications, that is, ectoplasmic arms and ectoplasmic rods. The structures photographed are ectoplasmic arms. Nevertheless, it is not possible to draw a distinct line between an arm and a rod, as an arm can be instantly converted into a rod when required. The function of the arms is to act as a power cable for the construction of voice boxes, either in the trumpet or attached to the medium. In the latter instance, the arm is used to convey the sounds from the voice box to the trumpet for amplification. These formations are also used in the process of apporting objects, conveying them in a dematerialized condition through the arm to the trumpet, where rematerialization is effected. When at times these arms have come in contact with sitters, they have been felt to be soft and flexible, slightly warm and coarse in texture. They are able to grip 77 objects. Plate number 14 shows the gripper-like tentacles at the end of the arm. When an arm lifts a trumpet or other light object, the control of the object is weak. In plate number 15, the arm had been connected to a trumpet, a second or two before the exposure, but the control of the trumpet was too weak to hold it, and it fell to the floor by the side of the sitter. The author has at times helped the trumpet to rest on his lap for photographs by gently raising the knees so that the trumpet would not fall off. These photographs provide corroboration for the descriptions of similar tubular or ribbon formations with sucker-like tentacles at the extremities, witnessed through the mediumship of Rudishandra. The possibility must not be overlooked that levitation of an object may be assisted by a rod which is withdrawn immediately prior to an exposure. On several occasions the ends of the arms have been illuminated. By a very high vibration the extreme tips of the arms are shown as a blue ring of light. It is important to mention here that the light is in a ring formation with a dark center. See voice production. When this phenomenon has been produced, there have been two such lights, which move about in a controlled manner. Firstly, they are shown near the solar plexus, then they move out away from the medium to the sides, forward, and above his head. When the guide has been asked to elevate them, they have risen above the head, and when asked to move them forward, they have moved forward, and so on. At one sitting the illuminated end descended in a circular movement to the mouth of a trumpet standing just in front of the medium. The trumpet rose in the air and moved freely round the sitters, the blue light being seen the whole time at the trumpet's mouth. Finally, the trumpet was returned to the floor and the blue ring of light was seen to rise from the trumpet and return to the solar plexus in an arc-like movement. 78. Quite different is the function of the ectoplasmic rod. This is used for strong movement and for the levitation of heavy articles. It has not yet been possible to photograph one of these rods. The guide Black Cloud has given the following reason for this. Rods are often invisible and cannot therefore be photographed. If the rods were to be brought into a physical condition, they would appear as shafts of light. If the vibration was still further reduced to create a physical object, it would simply photograph as an ectoplasmic arm. The emission of the infrared ray and the very dull red glow that accompanies it dissolves the rod instantly. It must, however, be placed on record that rods have been seen by sitters. In the many and varied conditions under which seances are held, there has at times been a slight degree of daylight seen through the general darkness where a window has not been covered with a thoroughly opaque material. The general darkness created was sufficient for the guides to work in, but to eyes attuned to the darkness a less dense black area is observable under these conditions. When this situation has existed and objects are in levitation, passing over this area, a strong thick straight structure is seen attached to the object in levitation, the circumference of which may vary from 3 to 6 inches. The less dark area is at times a fanlight, and the levitated object being so high in the air it would be absolutely impossible for the medium to have secreted a sufficiently sizable piece of mechanism about his person to accomplish such a levitation. On other occasions, luminous objects may be on the floor, and the rods can be seen, as described, against the lighted surfaces. At one sitting the author saw, against a very dimly illuminated area lit up by the glow of luminous paint, a rod extending from the ceiling straight down to the far side of the medium. This looked like a plank, about 4 inches wide. The thickness could not be gauged, 79, but this structure was perfectly straight and precise, the edges being as clean cut as a rule. Again in a very dim red light a structure has been seen by all sitters emerging from the solar plexus region as thick as the trunk of a medium-sized tree, about 8 to 10 inches wide at the base close to the body and slowly tapering off to where the trumpet joined it. Experience in sittings has given further knowledge of these rods. When a trumpet has been temporarily rested upon the lap of the sitter, 3 or 4 places removed from the medium, and is again taken into use, The rod has been felt across the linked hands or knees of the sitters. It is felt to be rigid and extremely strong, as may be gathered from the downward pressure that the sitters in question have experienced. It can best be likened to a rod of iron. These rods are capable of very great strength.